Has anyone ever walked up to you and said, you know, I'm not one to gossip, but did you hear about so-and-so? Now, hopefully you've never done that, but maybe someone has walked up to you and said those very words. I'm not one to gossip, but did you hear about? You know, some people by their speech show how inconsistent their spiritual lives really are. And when people show inconsistency like that, what do you tend to believe? That they're not a gossip or that they really are one? Well, I think you know the answer to that, don't you? And we're all like that. We can often see through people's inconsistency. Sometimes we can't see through our own, but we can see through other people's, especially when they come up and say things just like that. There's a verse in the Bible, before we get into our main text, Romans chapter 12, verse 18, which I think is a pretty difficult verse. You may want to look it up in your Bible as we read it. It's in a section where Paul gives a great deal of everyday practical advice to Christians about how they're to interact with one another, how they're to treat one another. And in verse 18, Paul says, if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. And our lesson really has a lot to do with that, because our conversation has a lot to do with living peaceably with all men. The words that come out of our mouth. Now, if we say things like, I'm not one to gossip, but did you hear about so-and-so? That will tend to not promote much peace. Now, that doesn't mean, as you see in Romans 12, 18, that doesn't mean that we're going to live peaceably with everybody. But it does mean that as much as is within our individual power. Remember, we can't force people to do what's right. I can't force you to do what's right, and you can't force me to do what's right. It's impossible. We all have our own decisions to make. We all have our own choices to make. But we need to be very, very careful about how we act, and especially how we talk to one another, that it brings peace and not trouble. In Titus chapter 2, verses 7 and 8, Paul writes to Titus, in all things showing yourself to be a pattern of good works. What's the pattern of good works look like? He says, in doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. The word sound, as it's usually translated in the New Testament, means healthy. Healthy speech. So if someone were to examine my speech, my words, so forth, they need to be able to say, yeah, that's healthy speech. Healthy from a standpoint of examining the Bible. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Colossians chapter 4, verse 6. You think that would promote peace? Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt? I think it would probably go a long ways, wouldn't it? Be careful how you speak to one another. Be careful the words that you use. Be careful the tone that you use. Be careful the context in which you use words, so that people won't often take our words out of context and misunderstand them. And that sometimes happens. We've been talking about the book of Job on Sunday night, and you might be wondering, what does this have to do with the book of Job? Remember Job's three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, that we talked a little bit about last week? They apparently had been friends of Job for a long time, because they had made an appointment to come together where Job lived and comfort him. That was their sole purpose in coming, was to comfort Job. And so they travel from apparently a long ways, and they meet Job. For the first 7 days, you know what they say? Not a word. That was probably the most comfort they gave Job, was when they didn't say a single word. They just sat there with him and comforted him by his presence. They should have, after the first week, went home. They should have just went back home. Well, from Job chapter 4 all the way to about Job chapter 5, we have their so-called comforting words that came out of these three friends' mouths. And one would speak for a while, and then another would speak for a while, then he'd go back and another would speak. And it was kind of like double talk. They would come, all of them, and would say things like this: Job, we've known you for a long time and you're a good guy. You do good works. You help people. You encourage people. You strengthen people. But I also know, one of the friends would say, that only bad things happen to bad people. So therefore, Job, you must be a bad person. You see how that sounds like double talk? Job, I know you're a good person, you help people, you encourage people, but you must be a bad person. That's like the person that comes up to you and says, I'm not one to gossip, but did you hear about? See, that's the same type of double talk that Job's friends were involved in. Over and over and over, Job had undergone such a horrible time. Job just needed sympathy and understanding. That's all he needed. Didn't need a lecture, didn't need any of their so-called advice. And they come up to him and one after another say, Job, we've known you a long time and you're a wonderful person. We have just thought the world of you, but you're actually pretty evil. Now, how in the world is that going to make anybody feel? But that's exactly what they were involved in double talk. I want to start tonight in Job chapter 4 and just look at a little bit here that happens with one of his friends. In Job chapter 4, these are the words of Eliphaz, one of the so-called friends of Job. And let's see what Eliphaz has to say about his friend Job. And let's begin reading, down about verse 7. Job chapter 4, verse 7. It says, remember now, whoever perished being innocent? Or where were the upright ever cut off? Even as I have seen, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of His anger they are consumed. Now, it wouldn't take somebody all that intelligent to understand that they are being criticized. Job knew he was being criticized. Here's his friend, so-called, saying, were the upright ever cut off? See his reasoning? He says, Job, you're being punished for something horrible in your life. Outwardly, Job, you seem to be a pretty good guy, but obviously you're a hypocrite, Job. Only bad things happen to bad people. That was the foundation of Job's three friends' reasonings. Only bad things happen to bad people. And Job, you've had the worst things imaginable happen to you. Therefore, you are one of the worst people I know. Outwardly, you appear good. So therefore, Job, you're a hypocrite. Now, you can just feel how comforting Job has been from that. I mean, that has just built Job up. Job is feeling great from being called a hypocrite. But that's what he's saying. He says, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. Job, you're just reaping what you sowed. You know, your family's been taken away. Your possessions have been taken away. Your health has been taken away because you sowed iniquity, Job. Because you're evil. Because you're a terrible person, Job. That's why this has happened to you. Well, that doesn't make Job feel too good. We need to make sure we never, ever leave that impression with people. When somebody has undergone something even close to what Job has undergone, we should never, ever leave them in worse shape than they were when we showed up. We're going to end with that here in a little bit as well. What do you think Job would say? If it were you, what would you have said to these so-called friends? How would you have responded to that? Because first of all, you know you're not an evil person. You know you're not a bad person. You know you've not done anything terrible to deserve this. You know this is totally unjust. So how would you respond? Well, you have to go back to the very foundation of their reasoning, that only bad things happen to bad people. That simply isn't true. Bad things happen to good people about as often as bad things happening to bad people. The Bible says that God sends the rain on the just and the unjust the same. Think about all the wonderful people in the Bible that bad things happen to. I mean, one right after another, after another, after another. Bad things have happened to lots of good people. And I know good people today who have bad things happen to them. So I know, and Job knew, that reasoning was faulty. It wasn't true. Bad things are always going to happen to good people, period. And there isn't any way out of that this side of death. I mean, we're going to have bad things happen to us, period. Doesn't make any difference how good we are, bad things are going to happen. We can't escape that. And Job is going to respond just like that in a moment. Well, down in verse 21, Eliphaz is still talking. He makes another accusation about Job. He says, "Does not their own excellence go away? They die even without wisdom." Even without wisdom. It seems like he's not only accusing Job of being evil, but kind of indirectly saying that Job's not wise. He's foolish. Something else that surely is making Job feel really good. Now think about it. There's another 20 chapters of this, where Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, and then another one comes along a little later. But those three here in these 20 chapters, pretty much one right after another, accuses Job of the same thing, of being a closet sinner. Outwardly appearing like this wonderful fella, and then inwardly being a horrible person. Job doesn't sit and take it. Job responds back to his friends. In Job chapter 6, we see Job's response. Here's his first defense. First four verses of Job 6. "Then Job answered and said, 'Oh, that my grief were fully weighed, and my calamity laid with it on the scales. For then it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Therefore my words have been rash. For the arrows of the Almighty are within me, my spirit drinks in their poison, the terrors of God are arrayed against me.'" First thing he says is, the punishment doesn't fit the crime. He says, imagine a scale. He says, this is my sin, but this is the punishment. Job says, I don't deserve this. That's Job's first defense. It says, I have not done anything worthy of having all of my children killed in one day, all of my possessions taken away in one day. It says, I've not done anything that bad. That's his first defense. And in many ways, it's a very valid one, because that's what he's telling his friends. His friends are saying that Job's punishment does fit his sin. Job is receiving terrible punishment, therefore Job has done something horrible. See, that's what they're saying, and Job's coming back and saying, no, I didn't. I have not done anything worthy of this type of punishment. And that's the first thing Job says. Second defense. Let's skip down to verse 14. "To him who is afflicted, kindness should be shown by his friend, even though he forsakes the fear of the Almighty. My brothers have dealt deceitfully like a brook, like the streams of the brooks that pass away." Let's skip down to 19. The caravans of Tema look, the travelers of Sheba hope for them. They are disappointed because they were confident. They come there and are confused. For now you are nothing, you see terror and are afraid. Here's a second, you might say, defense. He says, where are my friends when I need them? Where are they? He says, to him who is afflicted, that person who is undergoing some terrible times, says kindness should be shown by his friend. What do our friends need from us during those times? They don't need a lecture on, yeah, you deserve everything you're getting. Now, they might deserve everything they're getting, but that's not the point. The point is, the friend should first of all be showing kindness and comfort. And that's what Job is saying. Where are my friends? I thought you guys were my friends. I thought you came here to comfort me. I thought you came here to help me. Why are you here? You're making things worse. And he gives an illustration. The Bible's just filled with pictures that should stick with us. Here he talks about a caravan. The caravans of Tema look, the travelers of Sheba hope for them. We have, of course, in that part of the world, people quite often traveled in caravans of camels, and there would be a number of them, and they would come to an oasis or some spot that was lush and green, and what would they be expecting to find there? Comfort. And of course, in that case, they were looking for water and food. And Job uses that. Job says, that's like me. He says, I'm on this caravan, and I see my three friends up there, and I said, oh, I can't wait to get there because I'm going to get some comfort, and I'm going to get some encouragement, and I'm going to get nourishment. And Job says, when I get there, there's nothing. It's empty and dry. See, Job was expecting comfort from his friends, and he got nothing. That well was dry. And he was hurting. And then he makes one more defense. Still in chapter 6, look at verse 5. He uses a number of vivid illustrations to show how he's feeling. Does the wild donkey bray when it has grass, or does the ox low over its fodder? Can flavorless food be eaten without salt, or is there any taste in the white of an egg? My soul refuses to touch them. They are as loathsome food to me. Then skip down to verse 24. Teach me, and I will hold my tongue. Cause me to understand wherein I have erred. How forceful are right words, but what does your arguing prove? You know, there's one thing about Job. He was very clever. And he really comes up with some great responses to his friends and their accusations. And that's what he's doing right here. He's making another defense. He's responding again to this accusation. The first one he says is, does a wild donkey bray when it has grass? What's a wild donkey wanting? Well, it's wanting grass. It's needing grass. And when it has it, it's not braying. And Job says, well, that's like me. Job says, I want understanding. I want to understand what's going on. See, Job doesn't have any idea about the conversation between God and Satan. Remember, that was kept from him. All he knows was the results of that conversation. Job says, just like that donkey wants grass, he needs grass, desires it. Job says, I desire understanding. Remember what verse 24 said? Cause me to understand. Job says, I want understanding. And then he says, does the ox low over its fodder? Pretty much the same idea, the ox needing grain to eat. Job says, I need understanding to get through this. I need some real wisdom and advice and counsel to get through this. He says, can flavorless food be eaten without salt? Flavorless food. It says, I need some salt. Here he's probably talking about how, you know, we talk about bland food and how it needs something to spice it up so it can be digested. Well, that was kind of his response to their arguments. You know, to him, that's what they were. And the same way with, is there any taste in the white of an egg? Not much. If you're like me, you like the yolk of the egg. That's what I like. If all I had to eat was the white, I'd just throw the egg away. Well, Job says, is there any taste in the white of an egg? He says, that's not helping me. There's nothing in that that's helping me. Job says, your talking is useless. It's making me worse instead of better. See, I need nourishment, Job says. I need encouragement, I need comfort, and you're giving me bland, tasteless food. It's not helping me at all. And then he says there in verse 25, how forceful are right words, but what does your arguing prove? He says, these arguments you're trying to make, that only bad things happen to bad people, Job says, I know better. Your arguments aren't proving anything to me. He says, they're not helping me understand my situation. They're not helping me get through my difficult time at all. Job says, you are absolutely wasting your time. And that's what he's saying to them. And I wonder if sometimes we don't do the same thing. You know, our words are important. Job might have thought, you know, after the first week his friends were here, he says, boy, this is going to be good. I'm glad they're here. They haven't said a word. They've just been here to kind of hold my hand, put their arm around my shoulder and help me through this. And then they go and spoil it. Part of the reason they spoil it is their lack of understanding. See, they didn't understand that it rains on the just and the unjust equally, or it rains on both of them. They didn't understand that. They thought that if something bad happened to you, then it's because you were bad. Now, that didn't change, remember, in Jesus' time. There were people who still thought the same thing. Jesus said, who, you know, were these sinners who the Tower of Siloam fell on? Jesus' argument was, no, they weren't. It happened. It just happened. So just because bad things happen doesn't mean the person they happen to is bad. Sometimes they are. But it's not some sort of general principle. Job was expecting more from his friends than he got. So how do we respond when someone calls us and says they need to talk to us? Or how do we respond when we know somebody has lost a loved one, or someone maybe has a terminal illness, or someone has just gone through a very difficult time? How do we respond? Are words always with grace, seasoned with salt? I think the best way to sum it up is if you would ask that person, after you were there, are they better off? In other words, would they want you to come back? That's really the main point, isn't it? Would they want you to come back? Do you comfort them? Are they more glad to see you leaving than coming? We have a great responsibility. Job's friends had a great responsibility. Probably nobody this side of Christ has ever suffered like Job did. And maybe no one ever will. But we know people that suffer all the time. Whether it's physically or spiritually, emotionally, mentally. And we have a responsibility to help them feel better. Not to go over and the first thing is to accuse, but to help them feel better, to comfort them, to encourage them, to strengthen them, to build them up. That's what they need from us. That's sound speech. That's healthy speech. It's healthy for me, and it's healthy for the person I give it to, because it makes that person better and makes that person more sound. And see, that's my responsibility. And I think we really have to understand how important it is to comfort one another. Yes, there comes a time when we have to say words that aren't comfortable. But those aren't the situations we're talking about tonight. We're talking about those situations like Job was in, where he lost his family, or lost his possessions, lost his health, and the only thing he needed was comfort and compassion. So what do people think about us? Are we people who make them comfortable, who help them? Our words seasoned with salt? I know that's hard to do, but yet it's our responsibility. And so when we leave here tonight, it's pretty easy to offer words of comfort here, but is it in the morning or middle of the week? Is it easy to do that? I don't know. It's things we have to think about. We do have a responsibility. I want us to think, in closing, about how important it is for us to offer words of comfort, to help people understand their situation, to help people understand that bad times are inevitable for everybody. And just because they're undergoing bad times doesn't mean they've done anything bad. Sometimes that same thinking that goes all the way back to the time of Job is still prevalent in our world. But it's simply not true, and we need to help people understand that. Some of us may not have been very good at comforting people who are in difficult times. You know, in the world you're going to have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. Those are comforting words. Those are comforting words to anybody. As we talked about this morning, those blesseds in Revelation, blessed are those who die in the Lord. And that's what's important, dying in the Lord. We have an opportunity tonight to be in the Lord. Galatians 3:27 says we're baptized into Jesus. That's how we get into the Lord. And then by being faithful, walking in the light, continuing to confess our sins, we remain in the Lord. And if anyone tonight needs to respond to that invitation, I would encourage you to come as we stand and sing this song.